Hello and welcome to the We're Not Experts History Podcast. My name's James and today Sarah's going to give us something slightly different from usual offerings. Hello, Sarah.
Hello. Yes, it is a little bit different, today's topic. It's still historical. It might be interesting. Possibly. Maybe.
Possibly. It's different. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's definitely historical. I completely agree.
Yeah. And it's more recent history. Although we have covered some more recent historical topics. We don't always go back to Victorian times and beyond, but this particular subject, it wasn't something I ever planned to do a podcast on, to be fair. We just happened to be in the area. So this is Suffolk, England, I'm talking about. And we were on holiday there in July, so a few weeks back. And we went to Rendlesham Forest, which has a history to it. So it's for anyone that doesn't know, Rendlesham Forest, it's in the Suffolk countryside, not far from the coast, and it's just a lovely, peaceful woodland, and it's managed by Forestry England. And it covers about 3,700 acres or so. So it's big. It's a big, an acre, a couple of acres is a fairly big space. But is just not far off 4,000 acres. And it's part of the Suffolk Coast and Heaths area of outstanding natural beauty. So it is a really, really lovely forest. And it's a mix of conifers, heathland, mixed broadleaf trees. And you get lots of wildlife there. So you get your deer and your owls and your foxes and aliens. Now, this is where it gets interesting.
Yeah, no, I'm not sure I agree with that bit, but carry on.
It's lovely. Let me do it. Let me actually talk about it. So a little bit before we get to that bit, let's talk about just Rendlesham generally. So much of it was planted in the 20th century, especially after World War II. So it's not like ancient woodland. And it was planted. Some of it might be, but much of it was planted. So it was a man-made forest and it was planted as part of national efforts to replenish timber supplies. And in the 1940s, the neighbouring area became home to RAF Woodbridge. And that was an air base that was used heavily during World War II and later during the Cold War by the United States Air Force. And it was chosen as their base because of its long runway and the remote location. And they probably thought as well that nothing untoward would happen in the middle of the Suffolk woods, but it did. Nah. It did.
The one time I went there, I can remember the trees were planted in a grid pattern. Mm. It wasn't a natural pattern at all. So they chose that.
Yes. Yeah, to be fair, you can normally tell when a forest is man-made as opposed to natural. The grid pattern, it's a little bit too neat and tidy. The 1980 UFO incident, that's what I'm talking about this evening. It is right now as we're recording this, but it could be any time of day for you. So this all kicked off just after Christmas 1980 when a group of US Air Force personnel stationed at RAF Woodbridge saw strange lights descending into the forest. And this was the early hours of December the 26th, so Boxing Day. And naturally, they assumed it was a plane crash or I guess they just would have assumed, oh my God, a plane's crashing. Yeah. And they grabbed their torches and they headed into the woods to see if they could offer any assistance. And what they reported next has yeah, it's been an ongoing debate amongst the public, and yeah, I'll just explain.
Fireworks, yeah.
So the first night, they've obviously seen these lights. They think it's an aircraft in trouble, and airmen. So there was Jim Peniston and a John Burroughs and a colleague. I don't know who the third person was. That's not been reported. They ventured into the trees and they claimed to see a triangular craft, which was metallic, silent, and it was glowing. And they did not recognise this craft. They'd never seen anything like this. Peniston, he actually claimed he got close enough to touch it. Now, why you would do that, I don't know. If I saw a glowing triangular craft, I would go very quickly in the opposite direction. No offence to the aliens, but I'm not touching it. No. But he apparently went up and touched it. And he described that it was warm to the touch, and it had strange symbols etched into the side, like futuristic hieroglyphics or something. Could have been IKEA instructions. Did IKEA exist then in the 80s? I don't know.
I think it existed before then.
Did it? I always think of IKEA as being fairly, yeah, I guess. I always think of it as being fairly new, but it has been around a while. But anyway, the aircraft didn't stick around. It zoomed off silently, as if it had somewhere better to be. So obviously, they're kind of pretty shaken up by this, I imagine. And the following morning, they've obviously gone back to base. They've reported what's happened. And the following morning at first light, a group went back out to look for evidence, and they found some. There were three small indentations in the ground in a perfect triangle. There were burn marks on the trees. And according to a Geiger counter, is it Geiger or Geiger?
It's Geiger.
Geiger, yeah, me and my pronunciation.
Geiger counter, yeah.
Slightly raised radiation levels. So not your, unless you've had a particularly wild Christmas, that's not your usual Boxing Day findings, is it? But there was nothing conclusive, So unless you're one of those that are into crop circles, in which case you've probably got your bags packed already and you're going straight to Rendlesham. It was just kind of a bit weird, but not conclusive, but still odd, a bit out of the ordinary. So that wasn't the end of it. Following night, there were more lights, and people on the base, they were officially on edge, and they were seeing these flashing red, blue and white lights weaving through the trees. Now, bear in mind, there was a lighthouse. It's not there anymore. It was demolished quite a few years back. But there was the Orford Ness Lighthouse, and that would have been in kind of the eye view of where this was happening. So I'll come to it later, but yeah, that was one of the theories that they said it must have been the lighthouse. But anyway, but yeah, this was happening. They were seeing these lights, and yes, although they thought perhaps it's the lighthouse, something was a bit odd and it was making people very edgy. So night three, they're still a little bit freaked, so they decide to start taking this seriously, and that's when Lieutenant Colonel Charles Holt stepped in, and he took a team into the forest, and he took a tape recorder into the forest to document what they found. And they did.
Before you carry on, for anyone listening in England, he's actually Lieutenant Colonel.
Okay. It said Lieutenant on Google.
Only the Americans say Lieutenant. It's pronounced Lieutenant.
Fair enough, but he was an American soldier, so we're going to call him Lieutenant for the purposes of this podcast, because because he was a US military person, okay? So stop ruining my thing.
Yes, military person. Carry on.
Yeah, you know what I mean. Anyway, after that rude interruption by Mr. Basildon.
Come on,
they found things. They found things. And the first thing was they spotted a glowing red object in the trees. And at one point it beamed straight down at their feet like it was scanning them, which is a bit freaky. And then there was a real show. Bright lights in the sky moving around in zigzags. Some of the beams allegedly shot towards the weapons storage area, which was on base, which raised a few eyebrows, I'm sure. And the recording, because as I just said, that he actually took a tape recorder to document what they found. And you can actually listen to that. If you Google it or you go onto YouTube, it's called the Halt Tape, and you can listen to the actual tape of them witnessing this spectacle. I've heard it as well, and it's quite eerie. So a couple of weeks later, Halt wrote his now famous memo to the Ministry of Defence, which says something along the lines of, something weird's happened in the woods. Not sure what, but I don't think it was a fox. And the Ministry of Defence, in true British fashion, they looked at it and said, rightio, and they just filed it away under no defence significance. So otherwise known as, we're not dealing with that.
Yeah, it's the Americans have seen aliens again.
Ooh. Yeah, yeah. So what was it? That is the £1 million question. Or $1 million question is what they normally say, isn't it? But £1 million, I'm a Brit, yeah. So I'm gonna say the £1 million question. £1 million question doesn't sound right though. But anyway, I'm a Brit, so I'm gonna say it. So the most popular theory, I mean, there's loads and loads of different theories. So let's talk about the different theories. So we've got your rational and semi-rational theories. So the most popular sceptical theory was the lighthouse, because as I mentioned, there was the Orford Ness Lighthouse, which was nearby. It's not there anymore, but it was then. And it was about 5 miles away, and it flashed every 5 seconds, and the beam did cut through the trees in the direction of the sightings. So it could be that the airmen were just chasing a lighthouse beam through the woods for hours, which is embarrassing.
Why was it only seen then? Why hadn't it been seen before when the lighthouse was working?
Yes, well, that's a good question, which might maybe why it wasn't kind of determined that it was the lighthouse, because yes, the lighthouse was present all the time. It didn't. But anyway, that was one theory. Another one was that it was just stars, just twinkling stars. But again, stars are always there. I mean, I know it does vary because of it depends if there's cloud and all of this stuff. But
I think they have stars in America as well.
Yeah, exactly.
They're not used to them.
Yeah, I would have thought so. And kind of going along the same line, but a meteor shower. That was another thing that they said it may have been, because a meteor was reported over southern England around the same time. And they thought that perhaps the airmen had seen part of it and misinterpreted it as something crashing into the forest. Maybe. But again, you would have thought you'd know what a meteor looked like.
Well, it's a rock. And I think the... if this meteor was hit a forest, it would cause some damage and they might have found it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it wouldn't just be a few burn marks on the trees and a triangular indentation on the ground.
Yeah.
So there are other theories. If we get into the whole military and conspiracy stuff, some suggest it was like a secret military experiment. So like a covert military test, which could have involved advanced technology and holograms, things like that.
Yes, the Americans are involved, so there's a couple of conspiracies.
Yes, there's always conspiracies everywhere, isn't there?
Yes.
Also, Rendlesham was next to RAF Woodbridge, which was a base that had US nuclear weapons, which was coincidence. One theory says that the UFO that they saw was a top secret aircraft, and it was possibly experimental and deliberately misidentified to test reactions. And then you've got the out of this world theories. So was it actual aliens?
No, I would say no.
But why are you saying this? How do you know? Were you there? No, you were not. You were not even... Were you born?
I haven't been born yet. No, I think if I'm an alien, I'm not thinking, oh, do you know what? I fancy visiting a forest and stuff.
Yeah, it's a bit weird. But...
Yeah, there's got to be other places they need to visit. I suppose the argument is, well, there was an airbase there with nuclear weapons.
Oh, yes.
And that's why they went to go to that area. But why wouldn't they just go to the airbase?
Maybe they didn't want to crash land into the airbase. I don't know. I don't know what the aliens' motives were. But obviously that is one of the theories, that it was actual aliens. They just kind of flew in to have a little look around and then flew away. And
yeah, my concern would be that, obviously, this little incident happened on the first night, and one of them spread the story that he saw something and touched something that was warm. So they then send people out the next night, and they're almost pre-programmed to...
Well, that was actually the next theory, was the psychological and environmental theories.
That's how they interpret it.
Yeah.
You see what you want to see as it were.
You don't.
All these people that go ghost hunting.
Yeah, you don't know the circumstances. You don't know if they were under stress, if they were sleep deprived. It could be some kind of mass interpretation of just a mundane event. You just don't know. Yeah. And like you say, and I used to, myself and my husband, we used to go on a lot of these ghost hunts when we were a bit younger. And yeah, it is very, and you see it with your own eyes. I mean, we generally would be a little bit more, not skeptical as such, but we kind of didn't buy into a lot of it. But you would see it happen. Mm. You would see one person getting freaked about something, and then suddenly it would be like mass hysteria, and you'd be like, nothing's happened. But you would see that happen. So yes, that is a very credible theory, that it could have just been that. I think
that's also one of the theories for the Salem witch trials.
Yes.
One of them started, and a few others decided they were going to follow.
It just blew up, yeah. It's that whole kind of, like, mob mentality, isn't it? Like, you know. Yeah. As well, talking about psychological factors, I don't know if you've ever been in a forest at night, but it's creepy. Forests are creepy. Even the most gorgeous forest is creepy as hell at night time. You've got flickering lights, you've got animal noises. Apparently it was also foggy at night as well, so you've got the fog, which can play tricks.
So the light, it's going to change the light a bit,
So combined with stress and this eerie setting, it could have just been completely blown out of proportion, and so another angle that... what were you going to say?
I'd also heard a theory that it was some British military decided they were going to wind the Yanks up, and they went and
did
a few bits and pieces in the forest.
You don't know. It could be. That's very credible. That could be what it is. Another angle that many UFO enthusiasts believe is that it was deliberately covered up. Obviously, the Ministry of Defence, they said, it's not a threat, and they moved on. But sceptics argue that this was a convenient way to downplay what they thought was a real encounter. And some witnesses claim that they were told to stay silent and not talk about it, which is a little bit... And records were apparently destroyed or hidden.
Don't tell anyone about this because we don't want to get that, or don't tell anyone about this because they think you'll sound like a moron.
Probably a bit of both.
I know which side I'm on.
The thing is that the trick that when you think about it, no one really knows what happened. Even if you were, well, I don't know. I guess if you were there, perhaps you would be convinced. It's one of those things, you have to witness it. It's like people that say that they've seen a ghost or encountered a ghost.
Yeah.
I guess unless you've actually encountered a ghost, which I have, not a full-on, a full-blown apparition, but I have had experiences where I feel like that there's no explanation, like that is definitely something paranormal that's happened. And I think unless you've actually experienced that, you can't, it's really hard to know if it is genuine or not. So I guess the people that were actually there and had that experience, they would, I guess they would have a completely different perception to what us as outsiders would have. We're just reading about it and hearing about it 40 odd years after it's happened. But yeah, it's quite, but it did have a massive cultural impact, the whole thing. And over the decades, the Rendlesham Forest incident has grown from a strange little military mystery into a full-blown phenomenon. And it's often dubbed Britain's Roswell. So it's kind of got that much kind of heat behind it.
Yeah, or it's just our attempt to try and match Roswell.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't think it does.
No, I've watched documentaries about that, and it's a bit different.
Very.
Yeah, but it's a story that's been retold in countless books and documentaries and podcasts and even the odd sci-fi film. And each one has added more to the legends. It's one of those things that it may have started out as a relatively minor event, and it gets blown into a massive thing. And it may not have been anything like that. I guess as well, when you think, even the people that witnessed it at the time, even their own perceptions and memories may be distorted because of the emphasis and the attention that's been put on it following the event.
Yeah, human memories are notoriously bad as well.
Yes.
Trying to recall incidents.
Well, you would know in your line of work, isn't it? So many hours after you interview a witness because it gets less reliable. I can't remember.
I don't know. Someone did tell me and I can't remember.
Yeah, I think is it 12 hours? Oh, I don't know. Anyway, because what you have to remember as well is if you're recalling a memory, you're not actually recalling the memory. You're recalling yourself remembering the memory, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So it's going to have holes in it.
After 45 years, anyone who was there is going to be
probably dead. No, I'm joking. I'm joking. Some of them will be, but
conspiracy. No, they're not so dead. They disappeared. They're recalling it, and they might embellish it a little bit. But after how many years of that telling them that embellished story, till they start believing it?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. You can convince yourself, can't you? And if you're being It's like when, so I studied psychology, right? So I'm not an expert in psychology, but I did psychology. I studied it. So we're definitely not experts in anything, especially not psychology. But there is a lot of research done to show how leading questions can impact somebody's memory.
Yes.
So if these guys have witnessed something in the woods, and it's all become this massive conspiracy, this massive thing, and then they're getting kind of led on, if you like, oh my god, like, you know, aliens, this, that, they're going to start to buy into it. Am I going to kind of play that role?
Definitely.
If that makes sense.
I mean, if you If you watch police documentaries where they're interviewing people, watch them, a British one, or watch an American one. British one do not have leading questions.
No.
They tend to start by saying, tell me what happened, whereas in America, they will lead them.
Yes. But even...
you can direct it whatever way you think.
You can, but even... It's not even just about leading questions. It's like you could be asking a question about an event, and it's what words you use in that question can direct the answer in a completely different way.
Subconscious. Yeah.
Yes, a lot of subconscious. And again, having studied psychology, I remember hearing about or reading about lots of different studies that have been done to actually show this in action. When getting people to recall events, how their perception of the event can change just by not necessarily asking a leading question, but rewording the question and putting certain words into it that would subconsciously make you think of it differently, if that makes sense. I don't know, I'm probably rambling, yeah. But what I'm trying to say is it could have got blown way out of proportion over the years. Possibly. I don't know.
No, yeah.
But it's one of those things that, going back to the whole cultural impact, it's one of those things that, rather than fading over the years, it's the Tao has been embraced. And the Forestry Commission, they actually created a now famous UFO trail, which we went to it. And it's a circular walk, and it's complete with signage, and you get a shiny model spacecraft, and yeah, it's interesting. And I tell you what, we went, like you say, you've been as well. Did you do the UFO trail? I don't know how long the UFO trail's been there, whether it's kind of fairly new or...
I didn't know there was one.
Oh, right. I mean, to be fair, it's very, very well advertised when you're there that there is a UFO trail, so it probably wasn't there when you went.
That was about 20 years ago.
Yeah, so it probably wasn't there then. I mean, we went because we've got kind of a mild interest in extraterrestrial and all of that stuff, so you know, we're quite interested in that, so we went. And plus we love scenic woods and things. And we went a few times, and it was mainly because it wasn't just because of the UFO stuff. It was just because it was just nice. It was a lovely, lovely woods, really nice atmosphere. Yeah, really enjoyed it. I'd definitely go again.
I wonder if you went there at night and found certain car parks, and there'd be strange interior lights and maybe some probing going on.
Probably. Remember, this is a family-friendly podcast.
You'd have to be more than one person listening to it for us to claim that.
Yeah. But there might be a family listening. You've just totally just downgraded it. But
yeah,
anyway,
sorry, Mum.
I don't think... I don't think it's that kind of woods. I don't know. I wouldn't go there at night, not for that reason. But it does attract a lot of attention at night. But I think it's more the UFO enthusiasts that go.
It's going to be UFO, yeah.
Yes, yeah. And I must admit, it would have a whole new thing at night, a whole new atmosphere. To be honest, I wouldn't go to any woods at night time, because woods generally at night time are creepy.
I'm going to imagine that most of those alien enthusiasts, people hunting for aliens, aren't going to go dogging because they've got no one to go with.
No, that's just mean. But no, you're probably right.
Anorex.
But, yeah.
Spotting.
Yeah, I guess it's a similar thing, isn't it? But apologies out to all the UFO enthusiasts that are listening to this that have just been insulted by Mr. Basildon and his ignorant views about UFO enthusiasts. So I wouldn't describe myself as a UFO enthusiast. I don't go around chasing UFOs. But I do have a mild interest in the whole thing. And I would love to be friends with UFO enthusiasts. So if you're a UFO enthusiast, be my friend, please, because I'd like to be friends with you.
If you're a UFO enthusiast, go into Google and look up the word friend.
That's just... Stop. That's just... No. Don't be horrible. But, yeah. So, final thoughts. What do you reckon? Do you reckon it was aliens?
No. I think I've made that clear early on. No, I don't. I think it's something's gone on.
Do you just not believe in aliens at all? You're just like, no, no such thing. Are you one of them?
No. I don't think there's been any conclusive proof whatsoever. I doubt. I would argue that there's a lack of intelligent life on this planet, let alone anywhere else.
I would agree with that, but...
I think it's like it ghosts and other sorts of bits and pieces. Something's happened.
Mm.
There's no immediately obvious answer, so it must be UFOs or it must be a ghost.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, I would agree with that. And I think it's very ignorant to say that aliens don't exist because we don't know. And it's more likely that they do exist than not exist because the universe is a big place and it's very ignorant for us to go, well, we're the only life form in this whole entire universe.
At no point did I say they didn't exist.
I'm not saying you. I'm just saying it's generally an ignorant view. So anyone out there that thinks aliens don't exist, you're ignorant. You're an ignoramus. So there
you go.
We just lost our viewer. Yeah, probably. Sorry, come back. Didn't mean it.
Our chances are I've just suggested a dog insight for them. They're over the moon and you've now scared them off.
We don't want to turn it into a dog insight, though. That would completely ruin it. Anyway.
I'm going to get more few people there, wouldn't it?
Yeah, for the wrong reasons. Yeah, not those kind of sightings. That's not the kind of sightings I want to see. But, so, yeah, interesting stuff. So there's a couple of, I mean, there's loads of information about this online, but there's a couple of good sources which I came across when I was doing my research for this. And one of them is Encounter in Rendlesham Forest by Nick Pope. And there's another one, The Rendlesham Enigma by Jim Peniston. So Jim Peniston was
was
the guy that was there, and a Gary Osborne, which I assume maybe he was there too. His name isn't mentioned, but perhaps he was part of it. I'm not sure, because there was a third person on that first night.
Yeah.
Do you know, what was interesting, I can't find any information about it, but... When we were talking about Rendlesham, so when we booked our trip to Suffolk, I'd never heard of Rendlesham, actually. So my husband's more into the UFO stuff and the aliens and all that. That's more his thing. I'm just interested, but he married me, so he's definitely weird. You can't argue with that. But when we booked our trip to Suffolk, he said, actually, he booked the trip to Suffolk. And then he was like, oh, I've just realised it's 15 minutes away from Rendlesham. We should go. Well played, husband. Well played. But he was talking about it. So he's telling me about it. And one of the things he said was that, and he can't remember where he saw this, but when he was hearing about the whole Rendlesham incident. So you remember I talked about one of the guys, it might have been Jim Peniston, who actually walked up to the craft and touched it. So whether, I don't know if it was definitely Jim Peniston, but one of the people claimed that when they approached the craft or touched the craft, they got what they could only describe as a download. They suddenly began, out of the blue, they started to visualise this kind of weird code. You know when something just pops into your head out of the blue and you don't know where it's come from, like a random thought?
Alien code, yeah.
It was a bit like that. So, yeah, he apparently got this code, like, kind of popped into his head. And years later, it obviously made enough of an impact on him that he remembered it and he actually wrote it down. And years later, it was transcribed. I don't know what code it was. It wasn't like a Morse code. It was just a code. I don't know. It must have been some kind of, you know, you get codes on computers when, right, so it could be, you know,
or things like that, yeah.
Yeah, and it doesn't make any sense, but it actually has like a meaning. It can be translated. And it translated to a message. And what was very interesting and was that the message, I can't recall, because again, I tried to research this before I did this podcast and I couldn't find any definite information. It could even be in the book, possibly.
Yeah.
But the message was along the lines of, you know, when you talked about the 1970, was it 1977? There was the broadcast interruption.
The late 70s, that's right, yeah.
And they were talking about how humans needed to stop fighting and all of it. It was very similar to that. It was along those lines that they were kind. It was kind of saying that we needed to kind of not fight each other and all of this stuff. Which, well, I thought it was interesting.
What are you with it? Actually. Well, no, because it's whenever you hear anything about aliens, and there was a film made in the 50s, The Earth Stood Still, and the whole thing was about an alien come down and say, you need to stop using nuclear weapons, you need to make peace. It's the same story over and over. Why aren't aliens a little bit more original?
Why are we still using nuclear weapons if the aliens are telling us not to use why are we not listening?
It's nothing to do with them. They want to wind their necks and stop coming down here telling us how to destroy, not to destroy each other. How dare you?
Yeah, but they're trying to help.
No, they're interfering.
And they obviously keep doing it because we're not listening, because we're stupid. Evidently.
If we're not listening, and they're going to keep coming back. What's the definition of stupidity? Keep trying the same thing, expecting different results?
Well, they must know something we don't. And I think they do. I do think that they do.
Yeah, I don't think they come in here.
I don't know. I don't know enough. I don't know. And to be honest,
they're not coming apart with our
crop. We could go. I could get really deep with this stuff, and I could start talking about like downloads and all sorts. But you would probably just be like, "Shut the hell up! You're weird. I'm not your friend anymore."
Yeah, I usually do my download first thing in the morning.
But honestly, yeah. If there's anyone listening that understands what I'm talking about when I talk about downloads from aliens, I'm your friend, okay? I know what you're talking about. But anyway, I'm not going to bore Mr. Basildon with it because Mr. Basildon isn't interested in all of that stuff. So, but anyway. So that is, in a nutshell, that is Rendlesham Forest. That is the story of Rendlesham Forest. And again, it was something that was never completely. It's still an ongoing debate. Long and short of it. It's an ongoing debate, and we don't really know what actually happened. But. If you are in the Suffolk area or you travel to the Suffolk area, I would definitely recommend a visit, not just for the whole UFO thing, but just because it's a really, really nice forest. I mean, we went about 3 or 4 times while we were in Suffolk for the week, and it was nice. We just used to take a flask of coffee and, yeah, just chill out, and it was lovely, lovely atmosphere. And we even went one day and it was raining and we just sat in the rain and just drank our coffee because it was just so chilled. Normally I'd be like, right, I'm going home. I'm not. But yeah, it was nice.
I think, you know, if you ignore Ipswich, Suffolk is a lovely county. It's well worth visiting.
Mm-hmm. Tell you what, if it was entirely up to me, yeah, no. But I think every county's got its good and its bad parts. I mean, you think of Essex. Is actually got some absolutely gorgeous parts of Essex. I mean, Essex countryside is lovely.
North, you know? Yeah.
Yeah, it's lovely.
It's got Tilbury.
And Grays. But anyway, and Basildon. But...
I beg your pardon.
Come on. You'd move out of Basildon if you could. I certainly would.
Well, thank you for listening to the very last episode of We're Not Experts.
Would you not move to... Do you know what, though? If it was entirely up to me, I would move to Suffolk. I would, because I love it. It's so lovely. And it's not a million miles away either.
If it was entirely up to me, you'd move to Suffolk.
Can you move me to Suffolk then, please? Make me happy. Thank you very much. Make it happen.
I think I'm made of money.
Yeah. That's the thing, isn't it? Well, that said, Suffolk is probably cheaper than Essex, so... Saying.
Not even, I understand. Anyway... Let's not get
on
house prices.
No, let's not, because we'll end
up... Down the aliens for now.
Yeah. But anyway, so that was that. I hope you enjoyed it. Anyway, I'll let you do the round-off bit, because that's your job.
Yes.
Carry on.
Yeah.
Carry on.
Yes. As said, thank you for listening. I need to point out that we do a range of little booklets for each subject. So whatever we've talked about, there is a book that we've put together, or booklet, I should say, we've put together on each subject. If you follow us on Instagram, you can find our website address, our very amateur website address on there. Failing that, I'll spell it out for you. It's wnehpodcast.wixsite.com/amateurs. And you can find links on there on the episodes page to all the little booklets we've put together. Please remember, you won't be able to forget once you've seen it, that we're not experts, we're just two history fans wassailing about aliens and other rubbish.